Good morning once again. I need to apologize to Brandon because I labeled him as Brian, probably because Brian is turning 50 and Brian has been on our minds all week. Brandon, I so apologize for that. Okay. Good to know. All right.
I did nothing wrong with
it. I'm going to begin sharing this morning, and then I will turn the microphone over to Brandon. This week, you know, when you sit in front of the TV for the last couple of months, it's kind of been disheartening to look at the shape of the world. And so I'm just bringing it in a little bit closer to us. I'm going to be talking about sharing with others and mentioning some people that we have shared with and encourage you to know and to recognize that there are people out there helping others and that there's so much good in the world, and that's what we need to lean on and to turn to and to remember that Jesus is in control. So I'm going to begin with sharing that the Lord encourages an active involvement in helping others. He calls his people to be a voice for the voiceless. The vulnerable need others to watch out for them. They need protection. There is a true need in this world for Christians to advocate for those who cannot speak for themselves. Proverbs 31, verses 8 and 9 read, "Speak up for those who cannot speak for themselves, for the rights of all who are destitute. Speak up and judge fairly. Defend the rights of the poor and needy." When I received that thank you note from Amanda, it really brought it home how, I want to use the word destitute, their family really has become because of an illness. And just like that, they're in need. And I thank all of you from the bottom of my heart for being so gracious and loving and help them buy a fan, buy shorts for their son. So meaningful to them. Probably means like, oh my goodness, that's nothing, right? That's what we think. But for them, it really was a gift. We are to judge righteously and speak up when we have the opportunity to right a wrong. Isaiah 1:17. "Learn to do right, seek justice, defend the oppressed, take up the cause of the fatherless, and plead the case of the widows." Well, compassion comes from the heart of God. Helping the needy is evidence of godliness. Helping others is an indicator of the kind of people that we are as brothers and sisters in Christ. We don't do it to be recognized. We do it because it's the right thing to do. When we are willing to help, God provides the opportunities for us to do so. An example of helping others would be the Christian organization Samaritan's Purse. I've heard it a lot on the news. It makes me feel wonderful that this Christian organization is out there and being recognized for their services in God's name. Samaritan's Purse provides aid to victims of war, poverty, natural disasters, and disease around the world. There are groups that provide essential supplies like food, water, and shelter for those who have been displaced. We recently heard it from Mennonite Disaster Service providing cleanup and rebuilding after disaster strikes. Remember the story the gentleman shared about the older man who was living in half of a trailer? That's all he could afford, was half of a trailer. And Mennonite Disaster went in and helped him to build it out. We've learned about Rest Connection, an organization in Quakertown that is helping homeless people. The woman who fell and had a concussion, lost her apartment, was living in her car, had to decide, do I keep my phone or do I keep my car? And Rest Connection took her in, and they're helping her to get on her feet again. And North Care Women's Center is giving care to young women who are pregnant. And I personally know, I have a friend whose granddaughter recently had a child, but that child now is 2 years old. But North Care helped her to make that decision to keep that precious little baby. It was such a blessing to all of them. The spiritual support given along with the aid provided is such a gift. Churches have always offered emotional and spiritual support during tragedies. Congregations have formed partnerships with other aid organizations to provide long-term recovery support. In the face of tragedy and adversity, many organizations have served others and reflected the love of Jesus. Sometimes people who are working and helping others, that's the only light. That's the only Jesus represented in people who are there watching them do it. They may not go to church, they may not own a Bible, but they see Jesus in those people. Romans 12:13, when God's people are in need, be ready to help them. Always be eager to practice hospitality. Responding with compassion provides not only help, but hope for all those involved. God's heart is reflected in serving others. As we walk the walk and talk the talk, God is the ultimate helper, and we are able to attain his values when we help. When we serve others, we become the people that God has intended us to be. We align ourselves with God's heart. We can find our true strength and hope in God no matter what the challenge may be. Evil is no match for the hope of Jesus found in Jesus Christ. There are some brief narratives of people who put all of their hope in God as they helped others. We're all familiar with Corrie ten Boom. She grew up with her faith-filled family in the Netherlands around the year 1892 she was born, and that would make her a child in 1940 when World War II was breaking out. The ten Boom family hid many Jews as part of the Dutch resistance. They were discovered, arrested, and sent to a concentration camp. This is where Corrie's father and sister died. Corrie's devotion to Jesus and reliance on Scripture is chronicled in her book, The Hiding Place. Corrie ten Boom survived her horrific experience and became one of the greatest evangelists of her time. She was the one that shared with her sister, "It's a good thing we have these fleas, and that they're biting us, and that we can't get sleep, and that we're miserable here. It's a good thing that we have fleas, because that means the German soldiers won't come in. They won't come in our barracks, because they won't come near the fleas." Amazing to keep that level of hope alive for the young people that were around her. Harriet Tubman. She was born into slavery in 1822. When she was 13, a slave master threw a heavy weight at an escaping slave, and it hit her in the head and broke her skull. Harriet experienced dizziness, seizures, and headaches for the rest of her life. After escaping slavery, she daringly returned 13 times to help guide other slaves to freedom, earning her nickname Moses. Harriet was Methodist, a Christian, and her faith was central to her courage and her compassion for others. She relied on the voice of the Lord to guide her through the dark nights and gave God the glory for her incredible work on the Underground Railroad. And when groups of people organize to help others, remarkable things happen. The country of Denmark during World War II, in a remarkable act of national defiance, collectively organized a rescue effort to smuggle their Jewish population by sea to neutral Sweden. The collective action saved nearly all of Denmark's Jewish people during the Holocaust. Collectively, together. Wellspring Church has developed a beautiful habit of seeking God's will while helping others in need. We are blessed to have created a practice using our abilities, our resources, and our finances for the well-being of others. It is good to imagine what it is like to be in other situations and to support them. We often pray for a more compassionate community and a more compassionate world. Today we are going to learn of an organization that provides needs for those in the Soderton area and its surroundings. And we welcome Brandon Trombetta as he comes to share about Keystone Opportunity Center this morning.
Good Good morning, everyone. Thank you for having me here this morning. I am Brandon Trombetta, the Executive Director for Keystone Opportunity Center. Keystone Opportunity Center, over the years, is people have gotten a misunderstanding about who we are and what we do. So most people know us as a food pantry. We do offer a food program that has two sides to it. Our food pantry provides service to people living in and around the Sagenary School District. We serve almost 270 families a month out of our food pantry. And to put that into poundage, we give out about 16,000 pounds of food a month. It is a lot there with the changes in the economy and everything else. We see four or five new families every month. People from outside the community do come to us. We do give them food. However, we refer them to people, to organizations closer to themselves so that it's a little bit easier for them to get there. We also have a Fresh for All program that is provided in partnership with Phil Abundance and Grace Bible Church. Every Friday in Grace Bible Church, we distribute 3,500 pounds of fresh produce out into the community in a drive-up fashion. We have volunteers that break the food down when it's delivered, puts it into boxes and bags. People drive up and they leave with 20 to 30 pounds of fresh produce every week. And to put that into perspective, if you were to go buy the stuff that they, if the food that they're receiving from us, if you were to buy that at the store, you'd be spending probably about $40 to $50 on that much. So we're helping people save their money to put it towards their housing resources or any other needs that they may have to remain stable in their home. With housing, we do offer some affordable housing opportunities. We have 18 units of affordable housing that we offer to the community right now. It's a mix of one bedroom, and we one bedroom is all the way up to three bedroom apartments. And we offer them at affordable rates, lower than market rate, to help people be able to start to get back on their feet, begin to save their money so that they can take care of themselves and their families. Whenever you walk in the front door at Keystone, or you call or you email, you're connected with the case manager. And our case management team, we have one full-time and two part-time case managers, and we serve over 5,000 people a year, so they're very busy. But whenever people come in, they go through an assessment, we learn about their most immediate needs, and we help them meet those needs. And then we get to know them a little bit more, and a little bit more, and eventually we start to learn the root causes of what's driving the issues that they're seeing, and we can either A, help them with our services, meet those needs, or we refer them to our partner organizations to help them get the resources that they need. Finally, we have an education program that provides a mix of services, educational opportunities that help people become more employable and better able to support their families. Through our education department, we had this past year through our GED program, we had 22 people pass their GED tests, and they're able to then get better jobs. We had, it was 505 people go through our ESL English as a second language class, becoming more proficient, more employable, and better able to support their families. And we do offer a naturalization assistance program, or support program. This past year, we set a record for the number of people that came to Keystone that became citizens. Prior to this year, it was 34 in a year. This year, we had 52 people become citizens through the program that we offer. All of these programs put together creates a phenomenal impact we have in the community. However, since Keystone was founded in 2009, we have done the same things year after year after year. I joined Keystone in July of 2022, and we just passed our new strategic plan, and we're looking to continue to do what we do, but add new things to our programs so that we can support people in other ways. One of the things that we're looking at is, I'm going to pirate, that's what we call it in the nonprofit world, where I'm going to pirate a program from an organization I used to work for. Whenever somebody loses their ability to drive, whether your doctor says you're not able to drive, or your car breaks down and you're not able to get to where you need to be, it really becomes detrimental to you and your housing stability. What we're hoping to start up within the next, I'm hoping within the next year, is a volunteer transportation program, where volunteers at Keystone will pick people up in their homes and be able to take them to the pharmacy, grocery store, bank, and doctor so that they can maintain their housing while they figure out how to navigate their changing lives. One of the biggest things that we see also in the community is the need for housing. And the unfortunately, with the prices going up and the wages not, housing is becoming more and more problematic. In, what was that, the second weekend of April, I went to tour a program in Austin, Texas called Community First, where they all have 550 units of tiny homes. Affordable. It's at max $450 a month. And people, that program is for people who were currently, who were formerly on the street in Austin. However, the program that they have is adaptable to anyone. So, hoping to find a way that we can increase our housing stock and be able to offer people affordable ways to continue to live in the community many of them have lived in for their entire lives. Finally, hoping to, we're going to start an advocacy effort to start educating people about the different things and giving people information about what's happening. Going back to this past December, it was announced that Social Security benefits were going up by, I think, 6%. That's a great thing to have. However, nobody talked about the other side to that. That whenever your income goes up, the food stamps that many people rely on, they're decreased. But also Medicare Part D went up $12 a month as well. So what looks like a good thing ends up being a negative impact on the individual and their family. So being able to educate people about that much. Also, we're excited to start offering, we're offering a poverty simulation as well. We have simulations coming up on August 8th and 9th, and if you're interested in learning more about it, I can give you some information. But these simulations, it's a four-hour in-person event where you walk in the front door, you're put into a family, and in that family you have a role, and the with that role you have to accomplish certain things throughout the week. And the big question is can you survive a month in poverty with a month with a week being 15 minutes? It is immense, it is very immersive, and whenever people leave, it's very nuanced in that you feel the stress and anxiety that they're going, that it takes to live in poverty. So those are some of the things on the horizon. One thing that I am looking for is we're building out our committee structure at Keystone. We're adding different people and advisory committees, things like that. If you have any interest at all in getting involved in any way, whether it be volunteering in our food pantry, some of our housing projects, or getting involved in administrative things, please reach out to us. Every year our volunteers put over 8,000 hours of volunteerism into our organization a year. And to put that into perspective, that would cost us about $500,000 to be able to replicate that if we were to do that. So our volunteers are incredibly important. So if you're interested in getting involved, learning more, anything, please reach out. We are a growing organization. We've been able to do what we do thus far with the support of the community, but we can't do more without bringing more support in. So with that, that is all I have for you this morning. I'm happy to take any questions, if any.
Where is your food pickup, your pantry, is that right? Like your offices?
Yes, so our food pantry, food pantry pickup is in the rear of our building at 104 Main Street in Souderton, North Main Street in Souderton. And whenever people come in, again, whenever you come in looking for, if you come in looking for food, you can leave with food that day, and either we'll set you up so that you can receive food on a regular basis, or we'll refer you to an organization that's closer to home.
Sounds like you're doing good work.
I tell everyone that I have the best job in the world because I don't actually do the work, I just get to talk about it. But we have a very, very dedicated staff. Everyone is there for the long term. I've been there since July of 22, and I am the third least tenured staff there. The most tenured staff, our education director, has been with us for 32 years. People come, they stay, the impact is incredible, and we're just hoping to help more people change their lives. Yes. One of the things I will say that in Texas, they don't play by rules that everyone else does. In that, in Texas, if you have land that is not inside an incorporated municipality, there are no zoning laws attached to it. That doesn't exist here. So we are looking for land to be able to test this out on. I would love to test it with, you know, 10, 20 homes, something like that. The financing, one of the homes costs about $24,000 to make, and they're good for about 20 years. I would say that what we have done, the thought that we put into this is that to try to get around the zoning aspect, taking resources off of the grid and then putting other things back onto the grid, outfitting them with solar panels so they're they're energy self-sufficient, using a foot pump for any and all water that needs to come in, incinerator toilet, you're not putting things back onto the system, so that should alleviate the zoning issues. But right now, it's a matter of finding land, and from there, build it out from there to see what we might be able to do.
The people that have been coming for naturalization, and I'm sure that you guide them along and support them for the next steps, but have any of them been affected by ice in Flatterton?
What I would say is that, to our knowledge, there is one person who just stopped. Nobody saw them. Nobody knows what happened. We have one person. And that was not naturalization. That was part of our ESL class. And after that, there were some other people became very concerned about ESL, about being in person. But thankfully, we do offer virtual options so people can take the classes from home so they can continue their journey just in a way that they feel safe. But knock on wood, we have one person where I'm hoping that they ended up going somewhere else. But they are, yes, and that's why our naturalization process, we're helping people do it what is considered the right way, going through the legal channels and getting to the point where you pass the test and you become a citizen.
What is your current housing opportunity? Is that just a temporary thing, or can that be a permanent?
So our housing, we don't have one local central housing. We have housing units scattered throughout the community, and we don't have a Keystone sign or anything on it. So it's just somebody living in the community is all the neighbors know. It is meant to be transitional, help people come in and get on their feet and then move them on and bring someone else into it. However, we don't put a time limit on how long, because that's us arbitrarily saying anyone, it should take you 2 years to be able to figure things out. What you see, I will say that I'm a social worker by training. As you go through people and helping them navigate and change certain things in their lives, other things are going to come up. And to be able to say to someone that, okay, it should take you this amount of time to fix everything in your life and be able to live on your own, it's just not, it doesn't seem fair. So what we do is we do annual assessments on them to determine where they are financially, how they're navigating the other parts of their lives. And when it seems like they're just about to the point where they're ready to be on their own, we start the conversation with them. We need to start preparing for you to move on to the next phase of your housing journey. Let's start looking at what you want, where you want to go, and put together a plan to move them out so that it's not a matter of us just saying, okay, you're done, move on, and without any planning. We want to move people on and truly break the cycle of poverty and homelessness that they've been living in.
You talked about the fresh product on Fridays.
Yes.
Just out of curiosity, is it just produce, or is it produce and meats?
It is generally only produce that's coming to us there. The problem that we run into is that with the meats, it has to be refrigerated at a different temperature. However, if they come to our food pantry, we do receive donations of meat from Clemens, Lighty's, private donations. There's actually a deer butcher in town that gives us meat as well. So if they're looking for dairy products, meat, or anything like that, they can come into the pantry to get that. But from the Fresh for All program, it is only produce.
And you're saying it's, 10 to 20 pounds?
20 to 30 pounds.
Fresh produce?
Yeah.
sitting here calculating, but I mean, for me personally, like, for us to go through 20,000 fresh produce a week, I mean, I know it's two, but yeah, that's great. That's awesome. But,
It is a needed program, and we used to give out 5,000 pounds a week, but Phil Abundance changed some things on their end and reduced us to 35, which we were originally, with the 5,000, we were able to serve 300 families with that much. With the reduction, we served 250. So we had 50 fewer families. However, we're still serving people, and the people that aren't able to get there before it runs out, they are referred to other organizations where they may be able to get some things.
Do they need to bring a paperwork that says what their income is, or do you just want them everybody?
For Fresh for All, they do not. For our pantry, they do have to come in and provide. They don't have to provide documentation. They just have to sign something saying that their monthly income is below a certain point.
And then you do collect.
Yes, and that's the we collect canned goods, food drives. Again, without the community supporting us, we wouldn't be able to do what we do with the increased needs. So it's something easy to do if you want to host a food drive, I can connect you with Clarice, our pantry manager, and she can walk you through everything to start one of those and all the materials needed for it.
And people from outside of the Sodexo can come. But you would refer that then to them?
Yes. They would. Whenever they come in, we'll give them food if that's what they're looking for, so they have food for at least a week. But after that, we will refer them to organizations closer to home so they're not traveling as far. All right. So I thank you all very much for having me. If you have any other questions, I'll be around afterward. And if you want to get involved, let's have a conversation. All right. Thank you.
So if you turn off the TV and look around, you will find some amazingly wonderful things happening in our community. I'd like to finish by reading again Proverbs 31:8-9. Speak up for those who cannot speak for themselves, for the rights of all who are destitute. Speak up and judge fairly. Defend the rights of the poor and the needy. And Psalm 18:2. The Lord is my rock, my fortress, and my deliverer, my God, my rock where I seek refuge, my shield and the horn of my salvation, my stronghold. May God bless each one of you. Have a wonderful week. Please join us for lunch. Brian's turning 50.